The Alfa Romeo is what's called a sports prototype. It's a very special kind of motor car, designed particularly for motor racing. It'll never be used on the highway. It was never designed for that purpose. In fact, it's backed by the Italian government. They spend vast sums of money every year in the development of a thoroughbred of this kind, particularly prestigious for Italians. Here we have at Sebring a different kind of race. It's not only a question of the overall win between Ferrari and Alfa Romeo. We have many, many different kinds of cars and classes here. Engine capacities, weights, all kinds of classifications. Good example of that's the Chevrolet Corvette. This car will be racing against those Alfa Romeos. It's got a bigger engine capacity, bigger horsepower, it's a heavier car, and therefore perhaps not as fast in the corners. And there's a big difference with drivers as well. Alfa Romeo have people like Peter Revson, perhaps one of the finest drivers ever to come out of America, and seven others are the best long-distance race drivers in the world. In this Chevrolet, however, you've got someone like Charlie Kemp, who's a stockbroker from Mississippi, and Oscar Kowalewski, who's a part-time racing driver. However, these same drivers, in totally different cars with totally different speeds, will be racing on the same racetrack at the same time. A big power and speed differential.
For understanding, a comparison of three cars. Alfa Prototype, Stingray, and the Family Buggy. For quick turning, better handling, under race conditions, the competition cars are shorter. Weight, Prototype has the others beat hands down to make it agile and quick. Engine size, big and beefy for the Family car and Stingray, the Prototype limited by race regulations. Top speed, the Alfa less than the Stingray, but it's much quicker. Miles per gallon, you obviously pay for performance in competition. Look for economy in family transportation. Back in 1950, cars starting here were mostly Allards, Jags, and MGs. 22 years ago, average speed 52 miles an hour. Today, 120 over the same course, and that often means trouble.
Sebring this weekend, there's been a lot of criticism levied on the safety factors of this track. The racetrack is going to be having its last race ever here, but this has been said for the last 3 years. Sebring differs from most other tracks around the world in the sense that it is still an active airport. It's a World War II disused airfield. It's used today for private flying and for a commercial company. For that reason, the racetrack can't have permanent safety factors built in. Of course, motor racing will never be safe, but it can be made a great deal safer than it is here at Sebring this weekend. Let me show you what I mean. Here you've got these dimples here made of concrete. They're were designed many years ago when Sebring was first laid out. They're far too high, they're far too aggressive towards a suspension now that's very delicate. If a car hits that today with a low profile tires and the very low wheels, you're going to have a puncture, break a wheel, or bend the suspension. In a modern racing car, that's not a very good thing. Then you've got things like banks on either side here that are much too low. If a car goes up this bank, the chances are it's going to ride up it. Instead of having a straight cut, it's going to be launched into the air, which is a very bad thing. Now this sort of thing is ridiculous. First of all, they've got this little shallow rise here, and then they've got a ditch. Now that's going to stop nothing, because a car coming along at this speed is just going to get launched up here. It's going to go right over that ditch, and there's hardly anything at all to protect that telegraph pole. There's this little drop of sand here, and that's little. So what's going to happen? A driver's going to end up right around the telegraph pole, which is just an unnecessary hazard in this case.
One of the things you can never have in a racetrack is unprotected hazards, such as telegraph poles and trees. Some people think that that tree will never be touched, but you can never guarantee there's not going to be a mechanical failure or two cars touching in an unlikely place. If this sort of thing does happen, if a mechanical failure or a tire goes down quickly in a race car, it can suddenly veer left, go straight off the track, and go into the most unusual spots. If a tree is without protection, the driver could be killed instantly.
Other drivers have strong feelings about Sebring safety aspects too.
Oh, I think the circuit is interesting, but this part is a little bit dangerous down, you know, with no guardrails, nothing.
There's always more that can be done to any circuit, and this is one of them.
I like it, yeah, I really do. I think there are some areas that are a little bit dangerous, but I think other than that, it's fun. It's got some high speed turns in it, and if you spin off, you've got some pretty wide areas to go in without really getting into anything. A couple of places I don't like, but other than that, it's okay.
Sebring, I feel, is going towards its last ever race. This, for some people, will be a very sad time, but for others, almost a breath of relief.
Sebring, to me, is a relaxed race. And all endurance racing, in my mind, is more relaxed than Can-Am type racing or sprint racing. You have more time and you don't use your car like you would in a normal race.
It seems, though, with the drivers and the personnel, not the same urgency about things as you normally see in a race. I mean, here am I at a race that I'm not competing at, and I don't seem to see the same feverish activity.
Another thing about endurance racing with so many classes, you have to be aware of speed differentials constantly in passing and being passed, those most dangerous moments.
The Ferraris, I mean, what's it like for you in a slower car?
Well, of course, the main thing that we wind up looking into both the rearview mirror and looking out front because we're going a lot faster than so many cars, and we're going slower than the big cars, so we're looking both ways.
But there's still a big disparity between driver talent, Peter, and speed itself.
Oh, yeah. I think most of us that drive the fast cars recognize this. You have to drive very defensively. It's almost like driving on the highway. You've got to look out for the other guy all the time because they seem to be coming at you at times from all directions.
What do you think of the abilities of some of those drivers?
Well, I would say if you got fairly strict and set up a standard for driving in this race that was acceptable to the professionals, I think you'd probably eliminate half the field.
Toughest job for Peter Revson and co-driver Rolf Stommelen: exercise patience, stick to the strategy, hang in and wait for the right opportunity. A gentleman who knows all about endurance racing strategy, veteran entrepreneur John Wire.
Tell me, over the years, you're perhaps today the most experienced long-distance team manager in the world. What would you say the thing is going to be between Alfa Romeo and Ferrari today? What do you see that as strategy?
I should think that they will each send one car out. In the Ferrari's case, it's obviously going to be Mario, and they'll send one car out to set a pace and hold the other two back. Alfa, of course, I don't know which, I presume the car they'll send out will be Peter Revson and Stommelen, their fastest car, but they could, with four cars, they could afford to send two cars out in front.
The main strategy, I think, for all the teams is not to hit anything, because, you know, a couple of seconds slower on one lap is a lot better than a couple of minutes spent in the pits beating out a bent spoiler or something.
Yeah.
Mario Andretti in red Ferrari number 2 sits on the pole, average speed 124 miles an hour. There are other cars in this race ready to start now at 11 in the morning that will not average more than 75 miles an hour. All on the same track, all starting at the same time, with drivers of vast differences in skill. And on this note, the 21st running of the Florida International Grand Prix of Endurance gets underway. The checkered flag will go to the winner overall and to class winners exactly 12 hours from now. Until then, it's 12 turns per lap, 5.2 miles each time around, over and over and over. In the field of 60 cars, there are categories for every type of machine, from the sleek prototype, big Husky GT class down through the ranks, the little sedans and coupes, the span including Camaros, Porsche 911s, the powerful Stingrays, all with vastly different performance values, all cornering and dicing side by side continuously as the faster cars lap the back of the pack. 6 classes in all, 7 winners including the overall champion. Immediately, the Ferraris of Andretti, Regazzoni, and Peterson pull away from the pack so much faster than the rest of the field, and equipped with huge rear brakes designed especially for the demanding washboard Sebring track. The question is, how long will the Ferraris last, running through the shimmering heat and into the night? How long will any car last at Sebring? Each car, 2 drivers. Normally, each man will drive 2 hours, then try to rest. The machine gets no respite. That's why they call it endurance racing. Why do we have it? Because it's merchandising for manufacturers, especially at the prototype level. For the amateurs, a chance to run on the same racetrack with some of the world's top-ranking drivers. Money? Not much. Prize money is not the issue here. And how long will the people last? Standing in the Sebring heat, they've got 6 more hours until the sun dips into the Florida pines. The pit stop here does not reflect the intensity of an Indy or a Daytona, but the anxieties are the same. No one so lonesome as a driver walking home. The lure of racing for the ladies? Oh, it's here too. Peter Revson in red number 31, the Alpha, making a move to catch the Ferraris, but his 8-cylinder engine and chassis weight cannot compete with the screaming 12 cylinders of the lighter cars from factory Ferrari. And as the race wears on, it becomes apparent the Alpha will not really contest the Ferrari here at Sebring. Time, a few minutes past 12 noon. Charlie Kemp, running well in the GT class, into the pits for refueling. Does he want a driver change, asks Oscar Kovalevsky. No, Kemp will stay at the wheel.
Driver fatigue, of course, plays a big part in an endurance race. But 12 hours, in fact, doesn't seem too long, particularly because they run from 11 o'clock in the morning to 11 o'clock at night. But, of course, it does still exist, because Sebring is a very rough track, a very bumpy track, a track where they need to shift a lot, and of course the driver does get tired from the constant pounding of the steering wheel.
Always considered a fragile endurance car, the Ferrari prototypes are broken in years past, early in this type of racing, but not anymore. Time, 12:26 p.m., Charlie Kemp spins in oil and buys 15 feet of cyclone fence and a DNF for the race.
They've got the oil flag, you know, under the bridge there. By the time you get to the flag, you're already in the oil. So I looked up, and Mitchell's car was sideways. I tried to slow down. I was already in the oil by then. It was just straight off into the sandbag. And then goes this other guy right behind me, 97, flipped about four times.
Number 97, Camaro, driven by Rolando Quintanilla, youngest driver in the race. He walked away from it. Peter Revson's Alpha, in for fuel, and a new driver, Andre Diadamich. Revson, black flag, for allegedly passing a slower car while on Kemp's yellow flag condition. Now clerk of the course, Charles Earwood, has disqualified Peter on grounds of misbehavior. Peter Revson, one of the premier American drivers in this race, will not let the charges pass without being heard. Meanwhile, Mario Andretti and his Ferrari teammate, Jackie Ickx of Belgium, running away with the race. In the pits, Alpha team officials have already made apologies for Peter Revson, but Peter says, what is there to apologize for? What have I done? He goes to find out from the steward. A quarrel, not uncommon in racing. Dull race, the press grabs at the Revson incident for what might become good copy.
The Vatican is liable to send an appeal in here, you know, this thing.
The attrition begins for Alfa Romeo. One car, badly damaged body and suspension, goes out of the race. Three Ferraris, three Alphas, still in competition. The other classes, some running strong, some dogging along. As one writer put it, first, there are the fine machines and the top drivers, and behind them, a collection of antiques, station wagons, and pony carts. And the Ferraris continue to dominate the last 12 hours of Sebring.